When I was a kid, I grew up in Little Rock, and my family we weren't what I would call wealthy people. My dad made a living for us, and we never went hungry, but we didn't have money to burn. And so my mother was very, very thrifty, and she used to take me down to this, it's kind of a warehouse operation that sold blue jeans. They were manufactured there in Little Rock, and she would take me down there. And so for a certain number of pairs of jeans, you got a pocket knife, a Barlow pocket knife, I think it was. And for a 8 or 10 year old kid, that was a big deal to get a Barlow pocket knife. So I always enjoyed it when we went down there. But unlike what you see a great deal of today, when they wore out, we didn't go back down and buy a new pair of jeans. Mom would go to the fabric store and get these iron-on patches that now didn't match the fabric, of your jeans. The patches were dark blue, and your jeans were this kind of faded, worn-out looking blue. I spent a lot of time on my knees. I liked to play marbles. That was, a fun game. And you can't play that standing up. You have to get down in the dirt on your knees to play marbles. And I had friends who we played baseball and sandlot baseball and football and all things that require contact with the ground and the ruining of your clothing. And you know the problem with a patch. The patch is always stronger than the fabric underneath it. It always is. And a lot of times, especially if she used an iron-on patch, they would start to fray around the edges, and they'd start coming up, and they just didn't work really very well. Jesus has a similar story. And in his story, you can't take a piece of cloth and sew it, a new piece, this is my story really, and sew it on an old piece of fabric. And you can't take new wine and put it in an old wineskin. Now, back then they didn't have wine bottles. And so when they put new wine and a brand new skin, what happened is that wine would age inside that skin, and it would ferment and bubble and do what wine does, and it would stretch that skin. And it would stretch it to its limit. And so you would come along and you'd go to your neighborhood Raley's and you would buy a bottle a skin of wine. And really that skin had one use. It's not like a bottle that you can use over and over and over again. It had one use. Because if you put new wine back in that old skin, what happened was that the skin had already been stretched to its limit, and this new wine, this bubbling, fresh, new wine, would then stretch that skin beyond its limit. And it would pop a hole in the side of it, and you would lose all your wine. Now, Jesus, I don't think, is making a judgment about new wine and old wine. He's not saying that new wine is better. In fact, he says, we really like old wine, don't we? We like wine that has matured. We like wine. You weren't kidding when you said you were not coming. we like old wine because it has a richness to it. Our son, when he was in high school, he was a cellist, and he had a cello that he rented from the school system. And, rental equipment is banged up and mistreated, and, because everybody's using it that that rents one of these. His cello teacher was a professor at Texas Tech University. He was also a cellist in other orchestras, not only in the Texas, in the Tech Symphony, or maybe it was the Lubbock Symphony. He was also in an orchestra or two in New Mexico. One day, Mr. Follows, his name was Arthur Follows, he said to us, you know, if you want Jonathan to progress beyond where he is now, you really need to buy him a cello. And he said, I've got some friends that sell cellos in New Mexico, and if you'd like, my next trip out, I'll bring some back with me, and you can listen to them. And so we said, sure, go ahead. So at his earliest convenience, he brings back two cellos. One is brand new. Varnish is perfect on it. The other is 90 years old. And so we go over to Mr. Follow's house, and he cracks open the, not literally, the new one first and begins playing it. And it was lovely. But it was really bright. You could tell it was a brand new cello. It was bright. And then he takes the old one and he starts playing it. And it was like old wine. There was a mellowness that I can't describe for you. But you immediately knew the difference between an old cello and a new cello. You didn't have to be an expert. You didn't have to be a person that had ever heard one before. But you instantly knew the difference. Well, we bought the 90-year-old cello. Jonathan still has it. It's now over 100 years old. And I think that Jesus, in telling these stories, wants us to sort of think about the role of tradition and the old and all of that in our lives, and how it may, the real point of it is the vitality and dynamism and all of that, the life that the Spirit gives us, and how we might, in our traditions and our expectations, limit the Spirit at work in our life. We're not going to talk a whole lot about that. That will probably be about it. After he tells these stories, Mark, I think Mark arranges this for a reason. Because then he starts talking about Sabbath. Because Sabbath was really a proof text, really, for this whole thing of the new and the old and all of that. Because the Jews got really upset when Jesus started messing with Sabbath. And Mark tells two stories here. He says, after talking about wineskins and new cloth on old cloth and all of that, Mark says, let me tell you two stories. No, he didn't literally say it this way. The first story is that Jesus, on the Sabbath, goes out into a grain field and starts to pluck grain. Well, see, if you were a scribe or a Pharisee or a legalist and somebody who really knew the law, you'd say, you can't do that on the Sabbath. That's work. And work is a violation of the Sabbath. The Jews used to debate this issue a whole lot with Jesus. You can't heal somebody on the Sabbath. Jesus did that on occasions. He healed people with hands that didn't function and that were paralyzed and all sorts of things. And the Pharisees would get mad and say, you can't do that. That's work. Jesus says you would take care of an animal. You'd pull an animal out of a ditch if that happened. Then Jesus says something very, very telling. He says, you know, the Sabbath was made for man, not man, for the Sabbath. And you really get to the point here of understanding that Jesus wants us to look at the intention of things as much as he wants us to look at what's being said on the surface of it. It's not that Jesus is saying, I want you to play fast and loose with what God has written. Jesus is not saying, I want you to become all loose in the joints about how you deal with instructions from God about how to live and that sort of thing. But neither should you allow old wine and its desirability, or an old cello and the beautiful music it makes, to become so dominant in your life that the Spirit cannot work in your life. How many of us have ever been around a church that was so bound up by its traditions and its ways of doing things that there was no room at all for God to work among those people and change them and allow them to be a force for good? But I think that this is such a powerful telling text about how we often rely on the externals to rule our life. Bev and I went to see the Yale Russian Chorus on Thursday night. And it was held at Mercy at M and Bear Creek in the chapel there. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. The sad thing about it to me was that it was all white hairs in the room. I heard this marvelous music, some of it humorous. Not that I understood the words, it was all in Russian and Slavic languages. But you could just tell, you know, from the way things were introduced and all of that, that there was some humor involved in this as well. And I got to talking with somebody about, you know, how kind of sad that was, that it was only us white hairs in there. And he said something about, yeah, you know, this new generation doesn't like tradition or something like that. And I understand what he was saying. I'm not being critical of him, but at the same time, what if in our relationships with the world, what if I said, from now on, we're going to sing Russian and Slavic music? What if that became the new tradition? What if that became the new law? What would happen? You know, what kinds of things would happen in terms of my ability to relate to a lost world, to be able to speak meaningfully to people who don't understand Russian or Slavic languages? You can see the problem with that. And I think one of the things that's in my notes is that really God only designated one fast day. There was only one fast day. It was the Day of Atonement. That's all God says, I want you to fast on the Day of Atonement. But over time, the Jews began to add all these other fast days, and there was a plethora of fast days in the Jewish calendar because these were added. And I think part of it was because the Jews wanted to, they had experienced a Babylonian captivity. They had seen the northern tribes exterminated by the Assyrians, and they didn't want to ever do that again. And so come hell or high water, they were going to do everything in their power to avoid the kinds of sins that they had done that got them into captivity. And so they began to create all these laws and traditions. In fact, if you were to take a copy of the Mishnah, the oral code of the Jewish people, it's about that thick, In the introduction, it will tell you that the rabbis said, "We build a fence around the law." So here's the law, here's what God told us, and we're going to build this fence around. Why are you building the fence? Well, I don't want Amanda to get up too close to violating the law, so I'm going to keep her out here. Why? Well, I don't want her or me to go to Babylonian captivity ever again. And so all of these codes, all of these covenants, all these traditions, all this legality led to the point of stifling the spirit within them, of stifling their ability to minister to a world, to be relevant, to be contemporary and current in a lost world, because they were so dominated by their oral covenants. I would never argue that there aren't times when tradition is nice. If every Sunday you came to LifeSpring and Rich did something new, he rearranged something. So maybe next Sunday we come to church and Rich has Lord's Supper first thing. We come in and sit down and it's Lord's Supper. Well, you might go, okay. But the next Sunday we come back and we have the LifeSpring 5-minute break first. And the next week we do something else, and it's like you have to spend all your time trying to figure out what things mean and what you're doing. And so tradition has a way of kind of giving some order and direction to your life. That's not a bad thing. But when tradition gets to the point in our lives where it controls us and it removes our ability to let the Spirit work in our lives, it is not a good thing. So, I think, I don't think Mark is trying to remove obligation from us. That's not the point of this. He's not saying that I'm not accountable. He's not saying that. But I think he is saying that I can allow the externals of my life to get to such a level in my life, to become so important to me, that the things that are really important don't have a room to move around in my life. I heard a guy speak once. He was at a large, very large church in Southern California. And I can't remember. I think it may have been a congregational church, but I can't remember for sure. And one of the traditions of that church was that women wore hats in the choir. I think that's what it was. Something had something to do with hats, I think. And he was talking about the brouhaha that it caused within that church whenever somebody tried to change that. Oh, we can't do that. And you can see how silly stuff like that becomes when it achieves too high a level in our life. Another point, and then we'll pray. I think a really, really important point in this text is that the gospel, the Spirit, God at work within us, is like bubbling, fermenting wine. And as such, it ought to be creating constant vitality and fermentation in our lives. It's what it ought to be doing. If I'm bored about the gospel, if I'm bored about the Bible, something's wrong with me. Because Jesus says all that is like wine bubbling in a wineskin. Constantly maybe even upsetting my life, maybe causing me to have to think new thoughts that I'd never thought before. Maybe it's driving me to actions and conclusions that I'd never thought about before in my life. You ever had some sort of situation like that when you thought that the Lord was asking you to do something in your life that you were not prepared to do? And the disruption that it causes in your life? It does. It's the nature of taking up one's cross and following Jesus. Because sometimes it leads you like bubbling wine to places that you didn't expect, that you didn't plan for. I'd like to encourage you to go back and read. It's just a short text, but read Mark 2:18 through 23. And ask yourself this question as you work your way through that. What about my life is more like a wineskin that's been stretched to its limit? What about my life causes me to say, Lord, I can't go any further with you down that road? I think we probably all have our moments, don't we? When we say those kinds of things. And then maybe the next thing to do would be to pray, Lord, make my life more supple. Make me more like a new wineskin that's ready to receive this fresh new wine that you're pouring into my life. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your good news. Thank you for your gospel. Thank you for what it brings to us. The challenges as well as the tastes and the smells and the experiences of being your child. Please be with us this week. In Jesus' name.